The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the fourth tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the fourth tradition is Dave.
Hi, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. The fourth tradition, long form. With respect to its own affairs, each A group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. As I said, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. Some stats. I got sober on September 14th, 2009. This is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I have, the opportunity and the honor to try to share what was passed on to me and take other people through the book and through this process the way it was done for me. I was running around like an idiot before the meeting with this, like, book report. My sponsor said, don't do a book report, and I did a book report. And a few people that I respect very much said, you know what, put it away. Like, just speak from the heart and speak from your experience. And that's what I'm going to do. And also my sponsor said, speak to the newcomer. And that really, I shouldn't have to tell you that anymore. You know, it's not about you anymore. He he's given me pretty good direction thus far. So, you know, talking to the newcomer, if you have no interest in the traditions, I get it. You know, I still I'm guilty of that sometimes. You know, I like want to come here and I ended up here because I just wanted to feel good all the time, right? And, one of the things that I need to remember, and I try to share this regardless of the step and regardless of anything, is like, I ended up here because, and then I'll get to the tradition, but I ended up here because I really couldn't understand like how it was like the morning after again. And, you know, it was like an out-of-body experience. I'd be like, how did this happen again? With everything I know, how did I pick up that drink, right? Like, it baffled me. And, this tradition, and it was explained to me that this tradition is just a reinforcement of traditions 1 and 2, ensures that when I was ready, when I was like, you know, I don't want to live this way anymore, that this meeting was here, that these meetings are here for us. And that the message that in 1939, that was put in that book that, my sponsor explained to me, like, this right here is the recipe. This is the soup. You know, like, you can try to mix it up and start coming up with your own plan and add more flour and an extra egg. You're going to get a soup. You're not going to get this soup. So if you want what they got, you do what they do. And the traditions, again, it was explained to me, ensure that, you know, while we can, in this tradition specifically, while we have the right to, as a group, have different formats, open up differently, close differently, do it differently in the middle, the message is still the same. You know, we don't have the right to mess with, change the steps, change any of the traditions. And, the proof of that, and the old timers, when I read a lot of Bill's, like, writing on this, he was almost, I don't want to say cocky, but he said, do whatever you want to do. You know, because the proof will be in the pudding. And that's definitely my experience. You know, what I've seen is, you know, meetings that, I've just seen meetings fail. I'll leave it at that. You know, and the meetings that, in my experience, really try to carry this message. I mean, you know, it's, I believe that this group does that, and it's, you know, there's a lot of people here, and it's nice to see, you know, and I am grateful though, and I, you know, that I have had the experience, and my sponsor also shared this. He said, this is a great tradition for you. He said, you have a lot of experience. My personal life, I have a job where I travel quite a bit, and I have had, you know, some pretty neat experiences of going to meetings all around the world. I go to Asia, and I've been to meetings in Hong Kong, and actually, I was nervous. I went very early in sobriety, and I didn't think that there was any way that I could stay sober through that. And you know what? I went there, and early on, I went to this meeting, a morning meeting here in New York that happened to have couches, and I don't know what it was about the couches, but it made me feel more comfortable. In this meeting in Hong Kong, I walked into this room, and it was the same room. You know, there were couches, and I knew that I was going to be okay. There's also a great story about this tradition in the book that I had typed up in my book report that talks about, you know, this group that, like, you know, they were going to do it the best. They like, were going to build the nicest clubhouse, and they were going to have, like, different floors, and if I botch this, I apologize. But basically, in a nutshell, I think one was going to be focused on, like, education. One, I believe there was, like, a floor that focused on religion. And the bottom line is it was really serious, you know, bore out of that, you know, they ultimately failed. And they came up with, is it Rule 62? Am I getting that right? Rule number 62. You know, and excuse me, they said, you know, there was a card that they, at the end of all this, that one of the, you know, old timers handed to another, and he opened it up, and he thought it was going to be like this, you know, these words of wisdom, and it said, don't take yourself so damn seriously, you know, and, excuse me, and that, you know, that's also something that is refreshing here. And I think we get to see that here, you know, on our anniversary night. You know, we have music and some fun. And you know, that's important too, because when I came here, I really thought my life was over. First of all, and my sponsor mentioned, you know, that I should explain this too. I had no idea what AA was, let alone how it worked and what traditions meant. I didn't know what any of it was. So for me to take an interest in this thing, you know, I do because it works, and it's worked for me. For 7.5 years, I somehow haven't had to take a drink, you know, and so I'm interested in, like, keeping this thing going. I mean, it's really amazing to me. But, you know, the other thing is I didn't get sober to be miserable and to take myself really seriously. And I really thought my life was over. If there's newcomers who are here who are like, what do I do now? I can share at least my experience that, like, I don't have enough time to do it all. And I thought, like, what am I going to do? I'm not going to have anything to do. And, you know, there were very quickly, you know, once I dove in and, you know, this group happens to be a big one, which is nice. You know, I met a lot of people here, and there were activities galore. You know, it's, you know, I had plenty of stuff to do very quickly. You know, the nice thing also, speaking specifically about my experience and seeing this tradition in action is, you know, again, that as long as the goal is to carry the message, you know, this thing can look, have all different shapes and sizes. And I think this group exemplifies that, you know, in that Tuesday, you know, we have this meeting. I've said a couple times, it's a little bigger. We have a couple speakers. But it's pretty straightforward, you know. You know, Wednesday is a big book meeting where it's a lot more intimate and smaller, and it's a different format if you're not familiar. Thank you. You know, Thursday, Friday, and so I won't go through every meeting. But, you know, every meeting does it a little bit differently. But, you know, the key is, you know, that we're, you know, the main purpose is to carry this message and to be here for a newcomer who, you know, wants to, you know, wants this thing like I did when I limped in here. And just got the 1 minute mark. I'll shut down a little early. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Julie.
Hi, I'm Julie. Hey, thanks, Maggie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. My sober date is June 15th, 2014. I have a wonderful sponsor, April F. I've had the privilege of sponsoring women. And I'm terrified, but I actually thought I'd be more terrified. So I'm a little less terrified because a couple of people came up to me before the meeting and said, speak from your heart. And that helped a lot. Everybody that I've had contact with in AA has shaped my life just a little bit, saved my life just a little bit. And speaking in a church where I've struggled so hard to have a conscious contact with God is incredible. And I hope that I get to kind of stick with that because that's very important to me. I qualify as an alcoholic, and for me that's a tremendous relief because it explains so many problems that I struggled with through my life. The feeling of loneliness, the feeling of not fitting in, the feeling of people not getting, oh, Julie, you seem so outgoing, you've got it all together, and inside I feel so broken and less than, and thinking, how do people, like, get normal? How do they feel normal? What do they do? And then I drank, and I went, ah, okay, so this is what normal feels like. And I try to chase normal for a long time, but I think you only get that normal once or twice. Then it's horrible. My first experience with alcohol is really interesting because I define it in a way that I defined myself when I came into the rooms, was that I was a victim. And things happened to me in my life where it would be easy to say that I had no control over things that happened to me. But it doesn't do me any good to think that way, and I know that now. So my first drink, I think I was in 10th or 11th grade. My friends had me over for a sleepover, and they were having rum and coke. And I was the good girl. I was the girl that you would bring home so your parents thought you weren't doing anything bad. So I showed up there, and my friends were drinking, and it's like, I can't do this. It's not okay. And they gave me the rum and coke. And I have to back up by saying I hated the taste of alcohol. And I knew this because my parents used to have cocktail hour. And it was very romantic. And I couldn't wait till I was old enough that I could play Tony Bennett or, you know, whatever, and have my friends over and dance and sort of look at the sunset. And what my alcoholic brain filtered out was the yelling and the fighting and the passing out. You know, what I remember was the romance of it. So, you know, there I am with a rum and coke, I'm drinking it, and I couldn't stand the taste, so I held my nose, and I didn't just take a little to see what it would be like, I drank the whole thing. And maybe more, I don't know. But what happened to me was insane, and I remembered as my friends held me down, they made me drink as if they put a funnel in my mouth. Now, none of that happened, but because I'm a victim, I guess that's how I saw it, you know? So what I did then was I proceeded to ask my friends' parents when they came home if they were real. I asked my friends, are you really here? You know, I must have thought I was like Descartes or God knows who. And I called my parents, and I said, are you real? And, you know, in preparing for this, I spoke to my sponsor, and she said, I said, is that it? Like, does that, you know, is that something that's interesting? She said, Julie, that's insanity. That'll work. So, because it didn't stop me from continuing. One would think, you know, you put your hand on the stove, you get burned, I won't do that again. It's a good thing I didn't have an iPhone because a lot more people would probably think I was nuts in those days, but I had a limited, you know, rotary phone. So my experience with alcohol was like not all that great, but it didn't stop me. And I'd just like to fast forward to I ended up in rehab. It got really ugly. I'm not going to tell you every time I called people and asked if they were real or not. I thought I was invisible. I didn't think anybody thought that I was out of control. Because I thought I was still the girl that you wanted to take home and introduce to your parents, and I'll make you look really good. I guess to me that means when I fell asleep with my face in the soup or, you know, God knows what, that, you know, no one saw me. I was invisible. But here was the problem. In rehab, I went through the steps, and I was always a good student in school. I tried to be. So I went through the steps like a good student. Thank you. And when it got to step two, a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I was like, oh, I get it. Okay. And I didn't, because it was all up here and it wasn't here. Speaking from the heart. You have to get God from the heart. And I was trying to get God from the brain. And I remember when I had you had to speak there, sort of tell your story, and the counselor said, Julie, do you know what a feeling is? No, I didn't, because everything was up here. And that got me into more trouble, because when I left rehab, it was like, oh, I get it. I was really stupid, and now I've got it figured out. I can stay sober. I'm just not going to do any of the things that I did. And I had no defense against that first drink when things got really bad. Every time things got really bad, I had no defense because I had no God. And that was really serious. It got me into really bad situations. I almost died. I lost relationships. I lost parts of me that I'm still trying to get back. It was heartbreaking. But I didn't get it. So a few more times in rehab, I did step two, a powder greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And I remember the counselor suggesting, maybe you should stay longer. No, I've got to get home to my kid, my dog. I've got to get home. And she said, why don't you pray to God and ask God for God's will? And I said, well, but what if God doesn't know what I want? You know, God could make a mistake. That wasn't how arrogant I was. That's how fearful I was. And fear is the worst thing this disease could possibly have, and I was born fearful, and hopefully I die a little less fearful. So, fast forwarding, things really didn't get good until June 15th, 2014. At that point, I decided for one reason, grace of God, I woke up, I had it. Couldn't do it anymore, and I can't tell you why. And I've heard it said by you, if you're given that moment of grace and that window is cracked open, crawl out. And I crawled out of that window, and my friend took me to the 79th Street workshop where I met my sponsor, April. She came up to me. She was half my age. And probably for 30 seconds, I looked at her, and I went, really, you're going to get me sober? You know? I'm like, I've lived so much more. I have so much more great experience of, like, messing up my life. You know, this girl had, like, a lot of time getting it right. So thank God, through the grace of God, I started doing the work. So if you're a newcomer, and you can just kind of stop listening between your ears, because I thought I had all the answers, because I was a control freak. I had to fix everything, because there were circumstances in my life where I felt I had to fix things. There was no one there to fix it, and all my fingers were in the dike. And I looked back, and I went, what if I didn't put all my fingers in the dike? What if I gave that over to God? Maybe things would have turned out even okay and better, and I wouldn't be such a controlling mess. I'll never know. But my sponsor taught me what step two was. And here's how she did it for me. If you're struggling with God, and I just couldn't get that connection in my heart because I didn't understand how all these things could happen to me and there be a God and all the other stuff we think of in the world. And April said to me, well, borrow mine. Take my God. And that was my spiritual moment. That was a white light moment for me. And every time I tell it, it's a white light moment. Every time I struggle today and I don't know what I'm going to do, and there are things in my life that in certain respects are really bad, really hard, I'm reminded that when my God seems so far away, even though I work really hard to have conscious contact with God, and I meditate, and I pray, and I work with newcomers, and I do all the things that are suggested to me. I don't want to leave that out because I'm supposed to say what I do to stay sober. And I call my sponsor every day, and I pray. I remember that April's God is there for me. And then my God gets closer. So when God works through us, right, I forget the saying, that's what happened. God worked through April and came to me, and I only pray that God works through me and help somebody else, when you come hopeless and you think there are no answers and you have to figure it all out yourself, just drop your baggage and stick around for a while and do what you're told and don't think it's insane or not. I thought the suggestions were wacky. I didn't know I was going to have to change. I just thought I was going to be able to learn how to tolerate my life. And I've changed. And I see the change because I react to the same situation differently. And I have so much more changing to do. I'll probably need 80 lifetimes. But for today, it's enough that I could stand up here and I haven't had an asthma attack and freaked out. And I get to say goodbye when the sign goes up. Thank you.
And tonight, our main speaker is Marla.
Hi, my name is Marla. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 29th, 2006. My home group is the Atlantic Group. My sponsor is Amanda H. And I'm working steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. So I'm just going to take a second and just, you know, dear God, please direct my thoughts and my words. Help me to be present. Help me to just communicate all the love and gratitude that I have in my heart for this program and the fact that I'm sober today. Amen. So I'm really excited to be here. I mean, I'm nervous, you know, but I'm really excited to be here. You know, I used to always say if I was speaking at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, that must mean I'm sober and that's a big deal. And, you know, it's a big deal that I'm sober, and it's a big deal that you're sober. But, you know, I struggled with that for a long time, you know. I first went into a rehab when I was, like, 16 years old. You know, and I'm sober just about almost 11 years, so clearly I'm not 27. I like to be vague about my age, but I'm not 27. So I struggled for a long time. You know, I want to say how much I love this group. You know, I really love the Atlantic Group. You know, I said I struggled for a long time, and 11 years ago I came to this home group. I came to this home group because I met Heidi, who was my first sponsor and still a very dear, dear friend in my life. I was Heidi's boss. We worked together at a restaurant. And she brought me here. And, you know, actually, I'll give you a quick caveat to that story because, you know, the most important thing that I can talk about here tonight, you know, I'll paraphrase. You know, I want to do a good job. I want to do a good job because I want you to like me. I want you to think I'm a good AA. And I am a good AA. Like, I love AA, you know, And, you know, and then I think, like, well, should I go through the steps? Or, you know, like how people talk step one, and then they talk a little, then step two. You know, should I tell you my drunk a lot? You know, what should I do? And, you know, I want to thank the other speakers. You know, what I heard a lot of things that you both said, but I heard you both say, like, speak from the heart, you know. And I could do that, you know. So I don't know if I can quote the big book. I can paraphrase a little. But, you know, somewhere in there it talks about how the storyteller tells in his own words, you know, how he established a relationship with God. So, to go on a little caveat there about how when Heidi brought me here, when I first started working, you know, for this company, I was sober. And then I wasn't sober anymore. And it was quite obvious that I wasn't sober anymore. I went from this, you know, I was a manager in a restaurant. I was the one everybody went to when they needed something, when there was a problem, you know, whatever it was, a big problem or like, you know, there were no more forks. You know, whatever it was, I got the job done. And then I just didn't get the job done anymore, you know. I was late. I was a mess. I had like a broken heel. I mean, it was just terrible. And so it was quite obvious I wasn't sober anymore. But, you know, when Heidi and I first started working, working together, you know, professionally, I was sober and then I wasn't. And I knew I needed to get sober, you know, but I just felt like I didn't have it in me. You know, I had no more, I didn't have any more fight to do this. And the one thing I thought for sure was, I said to Hi, she was trying to help me. You know, she'd be like, meet me at a meeting. I'd get there. The meeting was over. I didn't even get there late. The meeting was over. I'd have some big elaborate lie why I wasn't there. You know, my sobriety date is 4/29. So it was around April. It was April 15th. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. I had to deal with all this tax stuff. I hadn't paid my taxes in like 10 years. You know? Like, I think I was sober, like, you know, 5 years before I even started, like, looking at that or paying taxes. But that's another story. So, you know, I said to Heidi, you know, Heidi, I don't think I can get sober and have this job. And she said, it was a Thursday. She said, do you want me to go to HR with you? It was a pretty big company. She said, do you want me to go to HR with you? We'll go to them. We'll tell them you have a problem, you know, and we'll get you help. We'll get you help, you know. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could do that either, you know. And that was a Thursday. And she said, well, I'm going out of town this weekend. You know, when I come back on Monday, let me know. Take the weekend to think about it. And the next day I got fired. And I got fired directly for my drinking. I had no idea it was coming, which, you know. But, yeah, you know, the CFO of the company sat me down and handed me this document, which was like statement after statement of people talking about the drunk that I was, and I got fired, and I, you know, so, but what? Well, I want to tell you this. So Heidi, you know, actually I called her Monday, and I said, today's the day, and this is important if you're new. You know, welcome to the newcomer. Like, I didn't look like this or sound like this at all. I didn't stand up here and tell you I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I hated Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. I didn't like slogans. I didn't like how people spoke in little phrases. I didn't like everybody's smile. You know, it was like, I remember once thinking like people here were like, oh, fairy dust, you know, and I didn't like that, you know. So, you know, I've had a complete change. I called Heidi on Monday and I said, crying. I'd been up all weekend. I got fired on Friday. I'm like, Heidi, today's the day. Today's the day. Please help me. Today's the day. Today's the day. And then my phone died. It was early Monday morning. I had been up all weekend. My phone died. I fell asleep for about 8 hours. I took a shower, I ate something, and I remember looking in the mirror and saying, today's not the day, you know. And, you know, if you're new, like, our window of opportunity to get sober is really, really small. So if you're here now, like, you're here, you know, like, you know, I thought, you know, Monday morning, I thought, today's the day. And then I thought, by Monday evening, oh, I just needed a nap, you know. Like, my problem was solved with a nap and a shower, you know. So, the gift of desperation, if we're here, we're here, you know. So I was saying how much I love this group. Heidi brought me to the Atlantic group, and something felt different here. You know, I had been around AA for a long time. You know, I tell this, you know, I celebrated 90 days 5 times. I celebrated 3 first anniversaries, and when I came back to AA 11 years ago, I had been sober for 6 years at one point. And at one point, like, I was doing the deal, you know, I was really doing the deal. It wasn't just, you know, here and there. And as I said, I didn't think I could do this again. I just didn't think I could get sober again. And I came to the Atlantic group, and something felt a little different here, you know. You know, perhaps it's one of the largest meetings I attend. So, you know, the size, the enthusiasm, the organization, you know, and I felt that. And, you know, so for those of us who don't want to be on the greeting line, or, you know, for those of us who, you know, whatever it is, you know, and whether you're new or whether you're here a long time, and, you know, I felt what we try to do here, and because of that, I really thought, wow, maybe I can get sober this time. Like, this doesn't feel like all the other times, and, you know, and that's hope, you know. And So I love this group because it gave me hope, and, you know, it was a gateway to a life and to meaningful relationships and understanding, you know, how to show up, how to be responsible, how to pay my taxes, you know. And, you know, and I got a lot of help with that, you know, like literally people sitting in this room, like, call this person, do this, you know, because everything seemed bigger than me. And still today, things seem bigger than me. So to back up for a little bit, you know, I drank a lot. I had a lot, you know, I had drunk driving accidents. I, you know, drugs are a part of my story. I did them all. I did them all. I loved them all. I did them all. You know, it's funny. I have this photo, and some of you here have seen it, where, I don't know, it must be like 1993 or 1994, and my hair is huge. Like, I don't know what was going on with my curls, but it's like huge and long. You've seen it. And I'm smoking a joint, you know. My eyes are barely open, you know. And it's funny, I thought about, you know, like the transformation that has occurred in my life through God and the steps and, you know, and AA as a whole. And I almost thought, like, wouldn't it be neat if I could just, like, tape that right here as I give this talk? Because it's really, you know, unbelievable. But so drugs are part of my story. You know, I like to say that, you know, everything was great in my life until age 9. At age 9, really, I don't know why, like, it's not like something happened then, but, like, everything started to go downhill at age 9. I have a niece that I'm very close with, and I remember when she was turning 9, I was like, oh, God, you know. And, you know, I hear a lot in these rooms, people talk about, like, oh, they always felt different, they always felt out of place, and you know what I, and, you know, also, when you hear that, if you're new, and you think, well, I didn't feel different, I didn't feel out of place, I didn't feel scared, I didn't realize that I felt those things. I don't, like, recall being 9 or, you know, 22 and being very afraid, or being young and feeling very different. I don't, you know, I don't, but as I look back, I see, you know, as I look back through these, you know, this sober lens and this understanding of who I am today and, you know, how I got here, I, you know. But the one thing I do identify with is, I was just so not present, you know, like, and even before I started drinking and doing drugs, like, I just was not present. I had no idea what was going on. And then when even, like, there might be this, you know, this is what's going on, I would be like, nah, you think? That's not what's going on. And, you know, and that's my alcoholic thinking, you know, like, on the simplest terms, like, you know, what's alcoholic thinking? What's this, you know, allergy? Like, in the simplest terms, like, delusional. So, you know, I still, you know, like, you think, you know. And that's why I need all of you. That's why I need a society of fellows. That's why I need a big God. That's why I need the steps. That's why I need my sponsor. That's why I need sponsees. Because left to my own devices, I'll be like, you think, you know. And that's how I always relapsed again. You know, I said I celebrated 90 days 5 times. I didn't believe the lie. You know, like the lie of this time it would be different. And I believed the lie. I did believe the lie. So, I had drunk driving car accident. And this stuff happened when I was young. When I was 16 years old, I totaled my mother's car that she didn't even know I had. I stole it the night before. Totaled it. Broke my jaw. Like, my chin was, like, over here. You know, I couldn't meet my hand-eye coordination after this accident. I am 16 years old, you know. So, you know, always that I've had big problems from alcoholism. And, you know, the first time I ever got drunk, I was 14. I wanted to know what it felt like to be drunk. I don't know why I wanted that. I just did. You know, my parents are not alcoholics, so I don't know where this came from. But, you know, I drank that night. However I obtained the alcohol, whatever, doesn't matter. But that night ended with throwing up all over the back of a cab. I was on the floor of the cab when it happened. The cab driver asked me to clean it up, and I used my jacket that I stole from my sister without her knowing either. Cab left me off on the corner of our block. There was a fire on the block that night, so the whole block was out on the street. It was a warm summer night. My sister came to collect me and her puke-ridden jacket and bring me home. I was 14 years old. And, you know, like, I could tell you a million stories in between there, but that really sums it up, you know? Like, taking something that doesn't belong to me, being asked to leave, being an embarrassment to my family, to my community, and feeling terrible the next morning, but yet also really wanting to do it again, you know? And that, you know, that's the story throughout. So I'll, you know, on, you know, 2006 in April, I got fired from what was one of the best jobs of my life, still to this day. It was, you know, it was a great job. I got fired. And then I went on, like, you know, like an 8-day bender, I guess, you know, but just, you know, and at that, and, you know, I had, like, nothing to lose, I felt like, at that point. You know, I'm not working. I've got no responsibilities. I can't, you know, I hate myself for what has happened here. I don't know what to do. I don't think I can get sober again. And I remember, it's funny, I thought about Bill's story, actually. Like, you know, and then came oblivion. And it was, I was, you know, I would be out all night. That was how it would go. And it was a Friday, I guess, it was 4/28. In 2006, and I'm on this like chaise lounge in my living room, you know, and I had some dry goods are involved, and I'm drinking a can of Heineken, which I don't even know where that came from. I actually think it was a crappy bodega on the corner, and they had like either a can of Bud or a can of Heineken. That was it. And I bought two, and I was drinking them, and I can remember, you know, and then came oblivion. That week there would be this feeling that would come over me where I would just, like, get that glazed. I mean, you know, it was complete inebriation, but just, like, you know, that glazed, like, I can numb. And I loved when that moment came. And, you know, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So I told you I'd been sober years, you know, and somewhere in that week, I called a friend that I had helped 12-step, left the most pathetic message of my entire life, sobbing. Like, I remember this, in my bed, sobbing, can't stop crying. Like, you know, and I basically told her I need help. She had not listened to the message for like 2 or 3 days, but she came over as soon as she heard it, and she took me to a meeting, and we went to some meeting on the Upper West Side. I don't remember. It was a Friday night. If I looked it up in the book, I'd probably figure it out. And you know, thus began my journey. And you know, she came back the next day. And, you know, like, talk about, like, unmanageable. Like, my apartment was so unmanageable. And she went and got me food. Now I'm unemployed. I'm broke. I'm a mess. I'm so thin. And she got me food, and I was like, oh, no, we can't eat in my apartment. And she's like, why? I'm like, there's vermin. I was, like, afraid. And I don't know if there really was or not, but I thought that I had, like, a mouse problem. And so I made us eat on the fire escape. And I actually have two bathroom doors in my bathroom. I took one off the hinges and put it on the fire escape. So there'd be, like, a little, you know, little platform, you know. It wasn't just... And she was like, do you think this is normal? And I remember, like, snapping at her, like, what? What's the problem? This is nice. It's like al fresco, you know? And she came back, and she got me the next day. And she called me. She said, I have two tickets to Cirque du Soleil. You want to come? I'm like, no, you know, like, I just slept till 6 o'clock. I can barely speak. And, you know, this is my first day sober now. And I said I had no money. And she said, I'll just pick you up. And, you know, so I spent my first day sober at Cirque du Soleil. And, you know, I remember I was, like, nodding out because I was, you know, I was tired, you know. And every night I'd open my eyes and something was flying over. You know, and I asked Heidi to be my sponsor, and I remember very clearly. It was, you know, and she said yes, you know, and you know, my first week. So, and you know, it's funny. I was talking to some people before the meeting, and you know, I, again, like, I mean, this, you know, get a home group. If you don't have a home group, get a home group. It doesn't have to be this home group, but get a home group and get a commitment and make friends. Because, you know, I've stayed sober for almost 11 years, you know, and yes, you know, the steps, God, but like a community, a society of fellows, that's what's done it for me. You know, like, I mean, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, like, gave my family, you know, a great Marla, you know? Alcoholics Anonymous gave my mother a wonderful daughter, you know? Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how to pay my taxes. Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how to get a job. Alcoholics Anonymous told me to just be quiet and go, you know? I mean, really, everything that I've learned, I learned here, and it's because someone here showed me what it looked like. So, I was talking to Bob before the meeting, and he's, you know, Bob is telling people, like, you know, I remember my first Big Book meeting of the Atlanta group at Marymount. And, like, you know, I looked at my watch, and I'm like, oh, my God, and I darted out of my house, and I started running to the train, and I realized, I don't know where this meeting is, you know, like, I mean, I was super new, I was like, you know, 10 days tops, and I called intergroup, and, you know, and I got to Marymount, I was there late, and, you know, everybody's in their circles, and the chandeliers, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, and Bob got up, and he came to the door, and he brought me in, and he explained, and, you know, and that's happened, you know, that's happened to a lot of us here, and it's happened to me more than once, and, you know, and what he was saying before the meeting, he was, like, referencing, you know, that time and, like, you know, how I literally pulled myself out of the gutter, you know? And I forget that, you know? Like, I really forget that. Like, I arrived here, I was completely broke. I was drinking Ensure because I was afraid I was going to die. I'm serious. I was, like, really skinny and sick, you know? I mean, and maybe I wasn't, but my mind thought that, you know? But I was very, you know, it didn't look good. You know, my clothes were stained. I didn't even know, you know? And my first week of sobriety, I remember this, my bicycle was in my bedroom, and I would take my clothes off, and I would just hang them over my bicycle. And I would wake up the next morning and I would put the same clothes on. And you know, that may sound gross or whatever, but literally, like, that was all I could handle, you know? Like, it wasn't even like I didn't have, like, I'm sure I had another clean shirt in the drawer, but I just, that was it. That was all I could do. And, you know, so today, like, my life doesn't look like that, you know? I'm able to dress, you know? And the bike's not in the bedroom anymore. No, seriously, though, you know, when, you know, and what happens, and the book talks about this, too, about how, like, you know, the people around us see it before we do. So, you know, I was not working, and, you know, I went to a lot of meetings, and I got a lot of service commitments, and I did what my sponsor told me to do. And I didn't understand that at first. I can remember being newly sober, and just imagine this, you know, for those of us here. You know, I can remember being really newly sober and using profanity directed at Heidi. And, because I thought that was okay, you know? And she said, oh, we do not say that to our sponsors, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm only joking, you know, but I learned from all of that, you know, and, you know, so what is it like today? You know, I've been a member of this group for the past 11 years, almost 11 years. I've been sober, you know, I did not get sober and straighten up and fly right. That did not happen at all. I got fired more than once in sobriety, you know, and that's not fun, you know, I got fired once for eating candy. That's true. It's true. And, you know, if I tell you the whole story, people, you know, people who are sober and legit people, you know, respectable people, be like, what? Really? God, that seems, you know. And it was harsh. It was harsh. But, you know, when I look, it was very harsh. It was not, you know, I mean, they were being harsh. They were behaving harshly. But, you know what? when I get real about it and I look, it's like one of my biggest defects of character is entitlement. I can turn something around in my head that, you know, it's okay if I don't go to work tomorrow because I've made up some delusional story in my head. And that's why I didn't go to work, you know, because, you know, they don't pay me enough. And, you know, I figure the way I work for them that, you know, I'm actually, no one's there tomorrow, so I don't have to go in. But anyway, so entitlement. And, you know, like the candy situation, it's, if you knew the whole story, you're like, really? But if I know me, right, and, you know, and I have alcoholism, you know, like I do, and I cannot cheat at all. If I cheat, you know, so I entitled myself to this little bit of candy. You know, it was just a very little bit, and it was there. It wasn't like I broke into some locked case and took the candy, you know. But you know what? It wasn't mine. And I'm somebody who suffers from alcoholism, and I'm somebody who has a defect of character, entitlement. And you know, I took that candy. And so I see that today, you know, and that is the way I have to live my life. You know, it talks about progress, not perfection. I kind of need to strive for perfection. I'm not going to hit it, you know, but if I'm just striving for progress, I'm going to cheat the system. You know, I had no idea what I was going to talk about tonight. You know, I called Ava before and I said, you know, I have a lot of material. I said, but I don't know what angle to go with, you know, and I made some notes. Like, I didn't even pick up this book once. I made, like, some notes here, you know. I mean, and then again, like I said, when I heard you guys say talk, you know, speak from the heart. So, you know, I always need to keep seeking and searching for a bigger God. That's the deal. You know, the God that got me through the clothing on the bicycle and, you know, I need a bigger God today because I have a bigger life today, you know. And my life is rich, you know, and my life is rich because of this experience here, you know. And I've learned that, you know, I can get fired for eating Juju stars and survive, you know, and live through it and not drink over it, you know. I can go through the death of a parent and survive and do it with a whole lot of dignity, you know, like Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, allowed me to help my mother die, you know, and then Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous gave my mother a memorable send off. You know, my mother was 81 years old. She hadn't lived in New York in 20 years. All of her friends were no longer here. Her family doesn't live here, you know. And we had a beautiful, memorable send-off, and it was all because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it really was, you know. And so I owe everything I have, you know, to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, regarding, you know, my mom, like, I wanted to give her a good funeral, you know. I knew she wanted that, too, you know. And, like, I can't tell you how AA showed up, you know, in so many ways, you know, sending gift baskets, taking me out to dinner, you know, coming, you know, getting the food, you know, showing up. You know, my sponsee sang at my mom's funeral, you know. That's not a big house. That's not the ultimate relationship. That's not the ultimate job. But, like, I couldn't have done that without all of you, you know. And, like, you know, I look back on a fourth step. And one of my fears was I won't have money for my mother's funeral, you know. And, you know, because of AA, that wasn't true, you know. After my mom passed and a few months later, we had gotten a letter that she wrote and gave to one of her aides. And it's kind of funny. She, like, said all this stuff to my sister. Lots of stuff to Lisa. No. A lot of stuff to Danielle, her granddaughter. And then she said, and Marla, I'm really proud of you in your life. Keep up the good work, you know? And, like, I don't need all that other stuff. You know, she was so proud that I was sober and that I had turned my life around, you know. And I remember, almost 11 years ago, I was talking to her on the phone. And she had said, you know, and she knew, like, my life, you know. She's like, so how long are you sober now? And I said, oh, I'm not sober as long as you think I am, you know. But, you know, that marked, and I told her the truth, and that marked, you know, another new beginning, you know. And, you know, I often say, I've been told I'm a good speaker, you know, and I don't know what that means exactly. But I know that I feel really close to God when I speak, and I didn't have anything prepared. You know, at almost 11 years sober, I switched sponsors, which is a big deal. And I just told my sponsor yesterday, you know, I think I want to go through the steps again. And she asked me why, and I'm like, you know, I'm just seeking, and, you know, and I feel like I need a bigger God, and I feel like I need to recommit, and I feel like, you know, and, you know, and I think it's just ironic that, you know, here I am here with you now, you know, sharing. So, you know, thank you. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Atlanta Group. Thank you, Randy.